It probably heard a lot of debate already about a study by Stanford University that concluded organic foods are not any more nutritious than conventionally grown foods. I suspect that it hasn't changed the minds of many of the people who have preferred organic foods. So for this week's Please Explain, we thought we would look into what organic food labels really tell us, how organic products are grown, and what the standards are for using the organic label. And we are joined now by Thomas Bjorkman, professor of horticulture at Cornell's New York State Agricultural Experiment Station at Geneva, New York. And pleased to welcome back Dr. Urvashi Rangan, director of consumer safety and sustainability at Consumer Reports. And we invite your calls and questions. You can reach us at 212-433-9692 or leave a question on our show page at wnyc.org. Let's begin with you, Urvashi. And by the way, welcome back. Aren't
Thank
there
you so
a few different kinds of organic label categories, 100% organic, certified organic, made with organic ingredients? What's the difference between them?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are these different tiers of organic labeling, and it sort of runs an increasing value, with 100% organic being the most meaningful. And then organic, which means at least 95% organic. And then there's a category called made with organic, which means at least 70% organic. Whichever label you see, it does all, while the percentages of the organic materials can vary, whatever is organic has to actually meet the standards defined by the United States Department of Agriculture's National Organic Program.
And does
they
have
it to be certified.
Does it apply strict standards?
It does apply strict standards. Yeah, there was a law passed in 1990. It took 12 years to actually what's called promulgate, but put them into regulations and be implemented. It's 600 pages of standards, hygiene practices, farm plans, inspections annually, in order to ensure that farmers and processors are following those standards in order to get the seal.
Well, I do remember the debate at the time, and there were concerns from organic farmers that the U.S. Department of Agriculture was kind of watering down the concept of organic. Did the stronger rules finally get included in the Act and
The stronger rules did prevail in the regulations. I mean, over time, we've definitely seen as the market share has grown, it's not really that surprising to learn that there are players involved who try to influence the standards downward to try to sort of capitalize on the standard. Groups like ours and a number of other sort of NGO groups that have been watchdogging organic have done a lot to stop a lot of slides that we've seen in front of us. There are definitely still some challenges going forward, but I think the bright light of organic is that this is a public program that anyone can get involved with. There are two public meetings a year where comments can be heard, and it's really the only of its kind that performs in that way and is really accountable to the public. It allows for a public process, and I think while it has its downsides in terms of being influenced, it is an open, transparent system that we can all participate in.
Thomas, when were the first standards for organic labeling set?
Well, there have been standards from private certifying agencies for quite some time, and it was the diversity and complexity of working with so many private agencies that really drove the industry to ask for a uniform national standard that made it much easier to develop the industry. And so, as Dr. Rangan said, that was in 1990, the law finally was passed. And I don't know when the first private organizations got together. Some of the older ones, like Oregon Tilth on the West Coast, have been around for quite a long time.
Well, how are the standards enforced? Do people actually go to the farms and make sure that the rules are being observed?
Yes. So the grower has to have an organic management plan that details just about everything they intend to do, how much of each crop, what their crop rotation is, what they're going to use for fertilizer and pest management, everything like that, in considerable detail. An inspector comes to the farm to see that they're actually doing those things, and then the sales records are used to see that they actually produced a believable amount of product from that land. So it's very closely followed.
Well, there are also some state-specific labels like California Certified Organic Farmers, Colorado State Department of Agriculture. What do they indicate? Are these stricter than the federal?
Those are certifying agencies. So with the national rules, those are now they're run by the states, but they're just another certifying agency. So their role at this point is exactly the same as, say, NOFA New York, which is a private certifying agency here in New York. So they're one of, I think it's around 40 certifying agencies active right now.
And I think what people may not know, Leonard, is that the USDA is not the certifier. The USDA is the holder of the standards and the improver of the standards, but they accredit certifying bodies, be it public or private, to actually perform the certification and inspection.
I've heard that some people from the green markets have gone to farms and said, well, we can't call you organic anymore. So is this also being done by individual groups?
No, I think what's happening at the green markets in some cases is that you have very small producers who do not want to spend all of the time or money that's required to get the paperwork in place to be a sort of bona fide certified operation. And if you don't really do that and you're making beyond a certain amount of money, it's really not okay to just call yourself that. In fact, it's illegal to call yourself that. And I think green markets are just simply stepping up on that enforcement to make sure that nobody is using that claim of themselves unless they've gone through the rigor that's required.
Thomas, is it costly and time-consuming to get certified?
You bet it is. Preparing all those plans and keeping all those extra records and paying for the inspector, that part is expensive. And what's particularly expensive is to actually do the practices that are required to be organic. So it does make a big difference. So using a label that you haven't earned, as it were, to get a premium price is something that has always been a problem that people are on the lookout for, and I think that's the green market phenomenon there.
So why is it more expensive to maintain the standards to be called organic?
Well, I think it's useful to go back to the original organic rule that says what how things are different. So I thought I'd just touch on that. It says that the goal is to use cultural, biological, and mechanical methods as opposed to using synthetic substances to maintain long-term soil fertility, to increase the soil biological activity, to ensure effective pest management, to recycle wastes, to return nutrients to the land, to provide attentive care for farm animals. Those are a lot of different things you have to do with a different set of tools, and generally tools that require either labor or growing material, like producing nitrogen fertilizer with legumes. You do that on your own land. So the expense of producing the nitrogen crop. Or if you're using things that you buy, fertilizer or crop protection materials that are organic, are approved for organic use, those are generally quite a bit more expensive to make, and so you have to pay more for them.
Does it have to begin with certain kinds of seeds planted in a certain kind of soil?
Let me jump on the certain kind of soil to begin with. That's the really important part, because the basis of organic is that healthy soils manage to promote the growth of beneficial microbes in the soil. That's what makes organic work. So that's the thing you have to do first. It's not just the absence of chemical fertilizers. It's actively driving a system in the soil that creates the conditions so you don't need to use other agrochemicals. That's hard to do, but that is really the first requirement of success. And then, are there certain seeds? First of all, the seeds need to be produced organically. So the seeds you plant have to be raised by an organic farm. There are some exceptions for when the organic seed is not available, but the seed has to be raised on an organic farm, and it can't have crop protection chemicals on it, which is a fairly common feature in conventional production.
We're talking about what organic labels mean on today's Please Explain with Thomas Bjorkman, professor of horticulture at Cornell's New York State Agricultural Experiment Station in Geneva, New York, and Dr. Urvashi Rangan, director of the Consumer Safety and Sustainability Group of Consumer Reports. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can leave a question on our show page at WNYC.org. But maybe I'll ask some of those questions first. Urvashi, what about some of the other labels? What does biodynamic mean? Is that an organic label?
Well, biodynamic riffs off organic, and it's actually been around for decades, just like organic has. It's an interesting system. It has a little more spirituality to it in some ways, but at the same time, when you actually get to brass tacks of what they're doing, it's definitely a value-added kind of label. They use a lot of the organic principles, but they also, I would say, go even a step further. They do things like only compost produced on a biodynamic farm can be used on that biodynamic farm. That's something that's actually a little more value-added than organic. And so biodynamic is a very progressive label. It sort of pushes the envelope, which is what we always want to see in terms of these sustainable ag practices and how we move upward over time.
Can you explain the standards for organic meat and dairy products?
Yeah, absolutely. For organic meat and dairy, these animals may not receive any antibiotics on the farm. That's very different from conventional animal production, where animals are fed antibiotics on a daily basis to help prevent disease in healthy animals. We at Consumer Reports actually find that to be very problematic, and we have a whole marketplace campaign suggesting that we should curtail this overuse of antibiotics in our system. So organic already does that, and they don't allow the use of antibiotics in production. Things like heavy metals, people may be surprised to know that we actually can feed heavy metals like arsenic to animals, again, to promote growth, pigment meat, do other things. Organic doesn't allow for that. The use of animal byproducts, people, again, may be surprised to know we actually feed poultry manure to cattle in conventional production. Those things are not allowed in organic agriculture. And so sometimes when you're looking at the value added in organic production, whether it's for animals or crops, it's important to also look at the backdrop of conventional agriculture, because there are so many surprising things that go on. Sometimes it seems like, well, why is organic really adding value? Crop rotation, things like soil fertility, those should all be things we normally do, but they aren't, because it's become such an industrialized system. So it's important to have that context in order to understand the value that organic brings.
There are also animal welfare labels. Can you explain how some of these came about? Is certified humane raised and handled the highest standard for meat?
Actually, there's a number of different animal welfare labels out there now. I would say that animal welfare approved has actually got some of the most stringent standards in place for animal welfare. And they're very interesting, and together they're sort of competing with one another, and they, in a way, that effectively increases the kind of standards we get out of them. But animal welfare approved, certified humane, those are examples of good labels that actually do go over and beyond what organic is now doing for animal welfare. So if you see a product that has the organic claim as well as one of those animal welfare labels, you're getting even more for your dollar.
Well, there's an organization called the Global Animal Partnership, which offers a tiered rating system. Things are ranked 1 to 5. But some people have said if one is acceptable, there's little incentive for farmers to raise the animals to the higher standards in order to get a 5.
Well, you know, it's interesting. The GAP program does provide a tiered rating system. It's what Whole Foods has been working with, and they do provide all the way from 1 to 4 at any given store. I'm not sure they would say that only one is being bought. I think there is a market And I think it is a way to incentivize the market so that producers who are moving from conventional into a more sustainable system can move into systems like this where it's tiered and almost incentivized to move forward. There's no question that the Tier 1 has more value than conventional, but Tier 4 has more value than Tier 1. And it's an interesting way to go about it. It's not unlike a producer saying, my product does not use any antibiotics. But that's a voluntary claim that the producer can make versus organic, which actually verifies that that producer didn't use antibiotics, which really provides a much higher level of assurance and, of course, provides so much more. We have a landscape out in the marketplace of labels that have varying meanings to varying degrees, and that's something we've spent a lot of time trying to help consumers understand what they're getting when they spend extra on certain labels, and to make sure that if it's something that is really meaningful, that we tell people that it does actually have that value they might spend more for.
We're going to go to listener calls and comments in just a moment. But, Thomas, I'd like to address the elephant in this room, this study by Stanford researchers that reported that an analysis of 237 studies of organic meat, dairy products, and produce showed that organic foods are not more nutritious than conventionally grown foods. What was your reaction to that study?
Well, not a very big one, I guess. Organic is a system of production, so the organic certification says that it was produced in a particular way, and through the process of developing the standard, it was clear that it didn't certify that it had specific properties.
Although some people, defenders said that the study didn't mention taste, and although the study suggested that the levels of pesticides were safe in non-organic. Right. There are a lot of people who want to avoid pesticides and other chemicals.
Right.
There's
vast variation in the taste and nutritional quality of particularly fruits and vegetables, depending on where they're grown and how they're grown and what variety it is. So we have the background of this, a lot of variation. And then organic involves a lot of different things. So I think the people who are doing research on the production see this huge amount of variation and know that organic doesn't mean a specific thing in that context. So there would be no expectation that organic across the board would increase the nutritional value. That just hasn't been an expectation on our end, although I do understand that it could easily be on the consumer's end. And in terms of the pesticides, again, we have quite stringent pesticide regulations in this country, so that while there are detectable pesticide residues, they are at levels that have been deemed safe by the best processes we have in place. But that being said, that is not satisfactory to certain consumers, and I think Consumers Union has actually looked at the reports of residues and put out summaries of that, and they show, not surprisingly, that the trace amounts of pesticides that are on produce, you do get less occurrence of that in organic, which, again, it's not too surprising that that would be the outcome.
Well, we're going to take a little break, and we'll come back to that and to listener calls. My guests are Thomas Bjorkman, who is professor of horticulture at Cornell's New York State Agricultural Experiment Station in Geneva, New York, and Dr. Avashi Rangan, director of the Consumer Safety and Sustainability Group at Consumer Reports. Your calls, 212-433-9692. Leave a question on our show page at WNYC.org. All after this. Mm-hmm. And since we're talking about food, well, great food is all around us here in New York, in restaurant shops and even on food trucks. But have you thought about some of the ingredients that grow wild as weeds all over the city? Join me in the green space on Tuesday, October 2nd, when I'll be talking with Mads Refslund, one of the creators of the celebrated restaurant Noma, some people say the best restaurant in the world, about how these forage foods are making their way onto plates at the world's best restaurants. We'll also be joined by a woman who supplies her garden's weeds to Danielle Boulou's restaurants. For tickets and more information about the entire Lopate and Locavores series, visit WNYC.org/thegreenspace, and I hope to see you there. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter.
WNYC is supported by New York Live Arts, presenting Voices of Strength, dance and theater by women from Africa, a mini-festival featuring choreographers from Mali, South Africa, Ivory Coast, Mozambique, and Morocco, September 18th through 19th, 21st through 22nd. Tickets at newyorklivearts.com. The Club at Briarcliff Manor, a new retirement community currently under development in Westchester, with views of the Hudson River and New York City skyline, 45 minutes from Manhattan. More info at 914-923-4050. WNYC is a media partner for Go Green NYC, a business conference with a network of green-minded professionals to empower decision-makers with sustainability strategies, tools, and connections. Wednesday, September 19th at the Time Center. Details at newyork.gogreenconference.net. WNYC salutes the arts. Join us in supporting local cultural organizations, including Queens Historical Society, celebrating the borough's diverse history with tours, exhibits, and school programs. Grace Music in Nyack, featuring concerts of classics and new styles and sounds. And Westside Cultural Center, providing environmental and cultural programs through its EcoFest and Taste of Broadway events. For more information about arts in New York, click on the events page at WNYC.org.
NASA's Curiosity rover could be facing a possible contamination risk. Join Ira Flatow on the next Science Friday for a look at the science of planetary protection, plus checking out the world's wind resources and an unusual explosion on Jupiter. Tune in today at 2 on 93.9 FM WNYC. And we are back with today's Please Explain Look at What Organic Labels Mean with Dr. Urvashi Rangan, Director of the Consumer Safety and Sustainability Group at Consumer Reports, and Thomas Bjorkman, Professor of Horticulture at Cornell's New York State Agricultural Experiment Station in Geneva, New York. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Let's get right to some of those calls. Alan from Manhattan, you're on the air.
I was just wondering, my understanding is that traditional ammonia-based fertilizers don't contain a whole host of things that the human body needs, like trace elements, like selenium, and so on and so forth. Now, I understand, as your panelist was saying, that an organic label is not a guarantee of these things, but would not, in this case, be, a conventional label be a guarantee of not having these things? And how could there be no health impact to this?
Thomas?
I'm trying to see if I understood the question correctly. So I gather the concern was about
trace elements,
impurities in the conventional fertilizers. And that really has not been a serious concern. That a lot of the fertilizers we get, they're analyzed, and to my knowledge, that really has not been an issue.
Urvashi, you have anything to add to that?
No, I mean, I think it is important to understand that when you use synthetic fertilizers in the soil, you're doing something very different than what organics trying to achieve, which is to create an ecology in the soil. And in industrial agriculture, when you use these very, like an ammonia base, but high rates of nitrogen in the soil, you do things that actually disrupt the entire ecology. In fact, you can almost create a state where you're dealing with sort of sterile soil and you're adding fertilizer in, which may have some short-term benefit, but over the long term, it really sort of cheapens the soil and the soil ecology. So in that sense, I think the use of these synthetic fertilizers in conventional agriculture are definitely something that organic doesn't allow, and I think organic does go the extra mile to look more forward and more long-term in terms of the viability and the health of those fertilizers for the environment.
A lot of callers or listeners have been writing in to ask about the difference between the various labels we see on egg boxes, cage-free, free range, organic, chemical free. What do they all mean? If something is cage free, does that mean that the chickens were allowed to wander around, or just that they weren't tied down?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, even if the cage-free is true, these chickens could basically be standing sort of knee-high, literally, in their manures, very close together in very unhygienic conditions. So cage-free, free-range, natural, so many of the labels, including natural, which is really important for the listeners to understand, have very few, if any, standards behind them, and they aren't verified. That is a very different thing than what organic offers, what some of these certified animal welfare labels offer. And it's why we have this site, ecolabels.org, that really kind of helps people figure out what those labels mean and what they don't. It's very hard to tell from a carton of egg labels which ones are actually meaningful, which ones have standards, and which ones are verified. But things like cage-free and free-range, unfortunately, don't have a whole lot of bona fide meaning.
So free-range, I always imagine, meant that the chickens could wander around and eat grass rather than be limited to being stuck in a cage and eating grain. Not true?
Unfortunately, not true. And because the government's definition is really that the animals only have the option to go outdoors, and that's the standard, there isn't any defined period of time. It isn't that they had to go out and have the sun shining on their backs with a shadow on the ground. There isn't anything like that, and it's problematic in terms of what it says and what it actually means. Consumers should not be duped by that.
What about grass-fed? Does that mean that the animal actually was feeding on grass?
Grass-fed is a little different, and there are some really bona fide standards for meat that claims to be grass-fed. The USDA has a little bit of problem in terms of which agency within it is actually running that label, but all to say, at least, the grass-fed label has pretty good standards behind it. We actually helped work with the government to roll back some weak standards they had proposed, and now if it is certified grass-fed either by the USDA or it is certified by the American Grass-Fed Association, that's even a little more meaningful. It means the animals had a 99% grass diet with the exception of young animals drinking their mother's milk. And in the case of the American Grass-Fed Association, they've taken that a step further and actually prohibit the use of antibiotics as well.
Carmen from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a 2-year-old son, and I buy organic because of the pesticide reason. I'm that person. And I oftentimes, because of time and everything else, getting ready for school, I just give him, like, the blueberries directly from the container because I sort of feel like it doesn't have pesticides on it. And when I give him non-organic, I do the fruit and veggie wash. So I guess my question is two parts. When it is non-organic, doing the fruit and veggie wash, is that effective? And is it something you would recommend? And then the second thing is when I give them the blueberries directly from the container, is that an okay thing to do, or should I also be washing that?
Thomas?
I would say that your main concern would not be pesticides, but people's fingerprints. That's where your main hazard lies. And so in either case, it's a very good idea to wash them. The best thing to use is cold water.
Now, are there organic pesticides?
There are organic pesticides, of course. There are certain biologicals and natural substances that are on the approved list for use as pesticides. Again, they're generally quite expensive to use.
Do they have a better impact on the environment?
Many times they do. The fundamental decision is whether they're synthetic or not. So if you have, pyrethrins, it's an extract from a daisy-type flower. So the extract from the flower is permitted, but the same chemical synthesized is not permitted. So there's something that has the same impact on the environment. But for organic production, it has to be from the daisy source.
and it includes everything in the mix. So, for instance, to get that material to stick to the leaves, you need to mix a little detergent or a detergent-like material with it. But if you use a regular dishwashing detergent, that kind of material is not allowed because it's synthesized from petroleum products. You have to have one that is actually a natural substance to get it to stick.
Pete from New Jersey, hi, you're on the air. Pete, are you there?
Hello, is
yes.
that me?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, hi there. Thanks, Leonard. Yeah, I wanted to pick up on a point that was talked about before the break where there was a study showing the nutritional difference in vitamins and minerals is not significantly different between organic and non-organic. And to me, this kind of thing, you hear this every so often, every year or two, there's another study like that. To me, it's just intended to confuse the public. They're trying to confuse the public about what organic means. Organic has nothing to do with whether something has more nutrition or vitamins or minerals in it. It's about the healthiness and safety and non-toxicity of the way the product is produced. That's what they're not saying in those kinds of reports. And to me, I think this is an important point. It wasn't clearly explained, I don't think, or not clearly enough when the question came up earlier. People need to understand that these kinds of studies are probably intended to confuse people about what organic is so that they don't think that there's any real value to having organic foods and products. People need to understand that organic has to do with being produced in a safer, healthier, cleaner, less polluting way, not about having more vitamins in the food.
Ravashi, the Consumers Report has gotten into this debate.
I can't agree more with the caller. I think Pete is absolutely right, and I think the way in which the authors of that Stanford study framed their findings was frankly distorted, and I agree. I mean, the question of nutrition, and, you know, it's not that they didn't find anything. And I think to the points we've been trying to make and what the caller just made, these are for, you know, organic was designed as a production practice to have demonstrable environmental benefits. It turns out there might actually be some inadvertent health benefits of those products. It doesn't mean it's always the case, but there are some studies to suggest that. And that's what the Stanford study actually found. Instead of framing it that way, they framed it as there is no certainty of nutritional benefit. They also asked other erroneous questions like, is organic food less allergenic? They found that it wasn't and therefore concluded that there was no clinical benefit off of that. That's simply erroneous. Why would an organic food provide less allergies? Oddly, they found a study showing that when kids drink organic milk, it might lower rates of eczema. That's really interesting, actually. So if you just look at the way in which they framed even their own study, frankly, it does a disservice to their study, but it does a disservice to consumers because those are not the principles on which organic were actually built.
Let's take another call. Emily from Huntington, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. You just mentioned something having to do with my question, the organic pesticides. I read an article not too long ago in the Times discussing something like 13 organic companies that are lobbying the government or lobbying the regulators to allow the use of pesticides and herbicides and still use their organic labeling. So I was just wondering if that could be clarified a little bit. It was mentioned on the program that there are organic pesticides, but if you're familiar with any of these actions, are there some that aren't organic? And, you know, do you have any more information on what these companies really want to do?
And some of these companies are huge, like the supermarkets are filled with Horizon dairy products, for example. Are they held to the same standards as my local farmer, Thomas?
Well, it's the same rule that everybody has to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, granted, there's there's been a tension in the industry. Everybody who's involved in the organic industry wants to see the industry expand. But then there's the tension: if you expand, you get bigger farms, and if your interest in organic was because it's smaller farms, then you end up with this dilemma of how do you grow without being bigger. And bigger operations work in different ways. There's no question about it.
Well, Alice Waters has talked about how if something is imported organic, it's probably not as good as something that you just would have been produced locally, even if the farmer wasn't certified organic.
Right. That's a trade-off between buying local and buying organic. Those are...
Are the rules the same if it's grown in Chile or China?
There is an international framework called IFOAM that tries to harmonize, as they say in that business, the organic rules among countries so that you can ship from one country to another and trust that the organic label is real. And I don't know, frankly, about Chile in particular, but
Sorry, I was just going to say, any organic product that comes onto this market is still accountable to USDA.
And we have to leave it there, unfortunately. We've run out of time. But thank you both so much for talking with us on today's Please Explain. Dr. Avashi Rangan of Consumer Reports, Thomas Bjorkman of Cornell, and it's been a real pleasure. On Monday's show, Wyclef Jean talks about his journey from Haiti to the housing projects of Brooklyn and Newark and onto the world stage as a member of the Fugees, and then director Penny Marshall on her life and career in front of and behind the camera. Also, Michael Chabon discusses his latest novel, Telegraph Avenue, which is set in California in 2004, plus a new documentary about how ACT UP began when a group of AIDS patients and activists taught themselves the science and policy behind the virus and ended up changing how the public and the government dealt with the epidemic. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Higgins, the executive producer. We had help today from Lindsay Hodges and Judy Joe, and contributing producer Christina Maldonado. Debbie Founder was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.